I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 193rd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guests today are Anselmo Pemba and Enrique Malonda, and they both were born and raised in Cabinda, which is a region of Angola, Central Africa. Anselmo studied business in college and worked as an import-export manager for GE in Angola. Enrique Malonda was the health, safety, and environment specialist for Schumburger. Thus, they both had excellent English and business skills before coming to Maine during this calendar year. So thank you both for joining me here for New Mainers Speak today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Let me start by explaining Cabinda's complicated situation to listeners for a moment. Cabinda and Angola were totally separate and non-bordering sovereignties that both came under Portuguese control during the colonial rule in 1883, but they functioned separately for the most part. In the 1960s, during the independence movement, Cabinda wanted sovereignty, separate from Angola. But a protectorate was formed which lumped them in with Angola without their consent. Subsequent movements to separate have been met with strategic violence, likely because they sit atop many natural resources such as oil, discovered around the time of liberation in 1975, and other valued items such as rare tropical hardwoods from their vast rainforests, gold, diamonds, uranium, and phosphates. And that is the simplistic timeline. So, gentlemen, what do you want Americans to know about Cabinda? What can you tell us about Cabinda?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I would like the Americans to know that Cabinda is such a blessed land with loving people, and we very humble by nature and welcoming. But unfortunately, since 1975, after the Portuguese and Angolan had this agreement for their independence, they decided to integrate Cabinda to Angola. From that time up to now, the people of Cabinda really suffer because of our resources, and we've been trying to negotiate with Angola. We've had so many attempts, like the most recent one is they call it memorandum of understanding, whereby the government would kind of provide special conditions or help to the people of Cabinda. Unfortunately, so far, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. The people miss everything. We try to find a way to survive. And the only people that have some opportunities back home are those that had the opportunity to go to high school or colleges, and those that didn't really suffer. You would wake up today, this morning, and you don't know what to eat. And especially for those parents with kids, you don't even have an idea what you're going to prepare for lunch for your kids.
So you're living in one of the richest natural resource places for soil and other things in the world, yet people aren't sure how they're going to feed their children.
For sure.
That's a dire situation.
Yeah, and if you look at the situation back there, Cabinda, that small place, provides over 70% of Angolan GDP, yet there's no hospitals. The hospitals are really crowded. It's as crowded as someone going to a weekend pub. The difference with the pub is that you go there to enjoy yourself, but in the hospitals in Cabinda, they are children, women, and even men. Screaming, and because there's nothing there. The doctor doesn't know, don't know what to do because there's no resources.
Yes, and you make 70% of the gross domestic product for the country of Angola, but receive so little services.
Yes.
The picture you showed me before, too, had trash strewn everywhere, so there's very little in the way of infrastructure.
Yes.
How about roads?
The roads are all broken. I mean, there's no roads there. There's no roads. So you have an idea when you buy a new car. In less than 6 months, the car is gone. I mean, completely spoiled because of the roads conditions. Because of the roads conditions. And that's very sad. So.
Yes. So it makes it hard to get ahead.
For sure.
Yeah. Can you describe your hometowns for listeners so that they might be able to picture where you're from and what it looks like there, whether you're on the Atlantic or reaching up into the rich rainforests neighbored by the Republic of Congo, Brazzaville, to the north, and DRC, Kinshasa, to the south?
Yes. Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity. Kabinda is pretty much located in a west-central area of Africa. Right, or a very small territory of about 700,000 and something population. And Atlantic Ocean, we are bordered by the two Congos, the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Republic of Congo. And then we have an outlet, which is the Atlantic Ocean. And the most occupying profession for the Kabindans rudimentally is actually agriculture and fishing, right? Because we have villages that are pretty close to the ocean in the south side of Kabinda.
I bet the fish are great.
Yes, the fish are actually great.
Did you grow up out on the water?
Yes, I actually come from the north side of Kabinda, which is Bukuzao, but I grew up in the main town that is Chowa, that we call Chowa, and I remember growing up. We have actually four administrative divisions, which are the Chowa City, Bukuzao, Kakongo, and Belize. Right, which are very small towns, and there's pretty much like my colleague just mentioned, there's pretty much no infrastructure. People live on their own efforts, right? So they will go to the bushes, to the farms, and
subsistence.
Yes, yeah. And the only city that is somehow industrialized is the main city, that is Chowa. And the main industry is actually the oil industry, right? We have many American companies operating in Kabinda, and pretty much you will find, I can say, more than 50% of the youth today speak English, and they bet more on the American English because of the American companies that are located in that place.
That's quite interesting. And Selmo, can you tell us about the house you were raised in? What did that look like?
Well, the house was actually a pretty small house back then. I was born, raised in a small town. They call it Bukuzao, a small town, but it's one of the most popularized back there. And back in the 80s, early 80s, my parents decided to move from Bukuzao. They went to Chowa, which is the only industrialized city, because my father was called for a company, Gulf Oil Company, which is an American company. Then he started working for Gulf, so there was a need to bring the family to that city. So we went to Chowa, and when we started back in the 80s, I remember I was a little boy. We started in a very small house, and then after years of work, I mean, my father's work, I know we moved from another house to a bigger one. I mean, from a smaller to a bigger one. And things were actually a little bit better from those that didn't have those opportunities. Yes.
Yeah. Were the houses, do they have tin roofs? Or what kind of materials are the houses made out of mostly?
Oh, mostly the houses are built of bricks, yes, bricks and steel.
Like tin roofs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Steel roofs. Mm-hmm. Is that, yeah.
Yeah, corrugated?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it is.
That gives me an image. Yeah. So I couldn't help but notice that the temperatures in Cabinda hang pretty steady between a low of 65 degrees and a high of 87 degrees Fahrenheit. And that 22-degree range might sound like a fantasy to some of us Mainers. Can you say more about the climate and agriculture of Cabinda, which is a small parcel of land between the Congos?
Yes. Just like most of the countries in southern and central Africa, we have two seasons, right, that we call the rainy season and the dry season. So our temperatures, just like you mentioned, vary from what we call the dry season. Somehow is a bit cold, which
yeah,
you can
65 burr.
Yes, which is nothing for you. So yeah, but that's when we consider cold season and we start wearing jackets and But so pretty much. The rainy season is where the agriculture happens, right? Or you will have most of the fruits that come from our rainforest, or you will have pretty much almost everything, right? Because people will go to the farms and cultivate and plant a lot of things, and the production grows really a lot if you're looking for fruits and vegetables.
Tell me some of your favorite things that come out of the gardens there.
We have some pretty good pineapples, or the mangoes in Cabinda are very good ones, or bananas, or a lot of what I can call Sylvester fruits, right? Things like, or what else I can mention here.
I hear the bananas don't even compare to our bananas.
Yes, pretty much.
It's hard to believe they're the same fruit.
Yes.
Do we have disappointing bananas here in Maine?
No, not really. Or not really disappointing, but when you move to a different area, you have to expect some changes in everything, right? Even in food you eat, you will find, or you may find the same type of food but different way of cooking. And so we were ready that we would find different things. And
do you have a new favorite food here in Maine?
We pretty much found almost everything, everything we eat back home. This is something that I particularly was surprised to find.
Do you have an African market?
Yes, yeah. Ma'am. Yes. Or we can find some very good food at Save a Lot. And there's also an African supermarket where you can find pretty much what we use back home.
Sure. Well, that's great. So the Republic of Cabinda is an unrecognized state with the capital city in exile in Paris, France. There are roughly, I understand, 265,000 people. Is that incorrect? I thought you said maybe there were 700,000 people. Yeah. More like 700,000? And it's the square mileage of about New Jersey. We're looking at about 7,000 square miles, maybe the size of Massachusetts. So what is it that the people of Cabinda want? What do you think would be best case scenario at this point?
Well, best case scenario at this point for the people of Cabinda would be unequivocally independence or self-determination, because we've tried everything, all kinds of agreements with the Angolan government, and nothing has worked. So the only way the people back home would kind of agree to come to another term with the Angolan government, that would be really self-determination, which is independence.
Yeah. Okay. And is that generally agreed upon among the Cabindans?
At least 98% of the people, yes, except those 2% that would have like family is well positioned in the government, in the regime of Angola? Yes, because
they have something to lose.
They have all the benefits from the foreign government, if I can say that. So, yes, they would rather continue having that opportunities and forgetting, the whole other people in the country. So
that makes a lot of sense.
That would be the reason why.
And just to add up on what my colleague just mentioned, it's not about what the Cabindans really want, right? It's about something that is your right. The history is there, legal facts are there, everything is there, evidences are there that Cabinda and Angola were separate, were different entities. So we cannot force something that was never, right? And there's been huge fights from the time that Cabinda was integrated into Angolan territory up to the date we speak today. So if there was something to be understood, it should have been understood, because it's been 43 years up to now, right? But as we speak, there are still people in the jungle, fighting, or there are still people in jails. There are still people running from sides to sides. A lot of people, just like you mentioned, more than 300,000 people of Cabinda exile in both Congos, and some are in Europe and America, right? And so if it was
so much strife.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak, and I'm Kate Manahan. My guests today are Enrique Malonda and Anselmo Pemba. They are both from Cabinda, which is an exclave of Angola, meaning it's not contiguous. And they are telling us that many people of Cabinda would like to be a sovereign state someday. So you too are interested in peacefully and democratically trying to share Cabinda's story with the world without political spin being put on the story by governments who have financial interests in the region. So tell us about your organization called ADCDH, which is a Portuguese translation, and it stands for Association, the Development of Human Rights and Culture, that has been around since 2013.
Okay, thank you very much once again. ADCDH was actually founded in light of various human rights violations in Cabinda. After many years of suffering, people disappearing, especially activists or human rights offenders, then the people were looking for somewhere to stand or someone to stand for them. So then Alexandre Kwanga, who is the president of this organization, came up with the idea together with Dr. Arão Temple, who used to be the CEO for the lawyers in Cabinda, decided to create this organization to defend, to stand for the people, back in 2013, in October. Then it started a very small organization, and today we close to 100 people or members, if I can say that. So we actually nowadays we are all over the world trying to bring the message to the world, try to make sure that the world knows what's going on in Cabinda, because sometimes there are people dying, activists disappear, only to be found dead.
Which is so important to underscore when you decide to make an organization like this, and for 100 people to join, it's terrifically courageous.
Yes, we had to kind of forget many things, like myself. While I was an employee of BP, simultaneously I was working for the organization. Like me, many other peoples, and most of them from the oil and gas industry, because those people that are not from the industry, who especially didn't have experiences to go around the world to see that the world is different from what it looks like when compared to Cabinda, have no idea what it is. So then the voices, we had to create this organization to kind of act as the voice of the people. So we've been fighting for that. A lot of people have been jailed. Myself, a lot of colleagues in the past have faced a lot of issues. And today, as we talk, like 6 or 7 days ago, another activist disappeared. They're trying to find him where he is, but we know that he was captured from home. We're trying to spread the news on social medias, because that's one of the biggest platforms that we've been using to try to let the world or the local people know what's going on, and whoever finds the people, that the person or saw him taken by anybody, to come and speak out. So there are a lot of things that have been going on there. So the organization was founded back then, and to date, we have suffered a lot of things. Like Dr. Adam Temple, his license for acting as a lawyer has been revoked by the regime of Angola for no reason, without any explanations.
Right. Instead of making him disappear, they make his power disappear.
Yes, because he's well known around the world.
Yes, they can't make him disappear.
For sure he can't. That's the same thing that happens with Alexandre Kwanga. But the only thing they did is that they blocked them from social development. I mean, anywhere possible, no company can accept them as employee, even though they're well-educated. So
that makes
it's
sense.
A really a complicated situation.
Wow. So it's not lost on me that some Americans and Canadians do know about Cabinda already, having gone there to extract minerals and oil and resources. If listeners are interested in learning more about Cabinda and ADCDH, Association for Human Rights and Culture, how would they find out more information about your organization?
We pretty much operate more in social media. We use Facebook. We use apart from Facebook, we use WhatsApp, you know, for communication, and we also partner with some of the magazines in Angola. Those independent magazines in Angola, they also sometimes publish our information, and we also work with the Voice of America. If you go to the Voice of America, you will find some information about us, and also DW Africa, there is a German news company, also gets in touch with us, and they have our information as well.
Wonderful. I will be sure to have some hot links on the website, newmainerspeak.com, where people can go right to this information and learn a little bit more about ADCDH.
Sure.
You said that the language Ibinda, spoken in Cabinda, is very different from the language spoken in Angola. Can you give some other examples of how your culture differs between that of the Angolan people further down the Atlantic coast?
Yes, thank you very much. And it's a very interesting question, because it makes much of the difference. This is one of the evidences we use when describing the situation of Cabinda, right? A lot of Angolan government entities, including the president or the ex-president, has recognized publicly that Cabinda is a different entity in comparison to Angola, because everything is different, right? We have 7 different tribes in Cabinda, and we speak the same language. Angola has many different tribes and many languages that do not understand one another. The tradition itself, we have, for example, if you name a governor for Cabinda today, he will have to go to a mountain called Chizu in order to be consecrated into our rituals, traditional rituals, as the chief of the land, and the government obeys it, right? And we have another group called Bakamas. That is, you'd really appreciate if you see the images of who they are. They actually dress with banana, the leaves of banana trees, And we don't know. Myself, I was born in Cabinda, raised in Cabinda. I don't know who they are, right? You only see them in our...
Very traditional peoples.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, they would come, dance, and the way we cook the food, our gastronomy is pretty much different. And we have some of the today considered the best dishes or in Angolan gastronomy, right? So we will have our dishes incorporated into that.
So much different culture.
Different.
You could
culture.
Go on and on, couldn't you, with music and tradition and language. Such different cultures, sure, all living sure. in one place.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, you are telling a very difficult story about a place that you love. Thank you for having the courage to come on and talk about such challenging topics with impacts that affect the lives of the loved ones that you have there. I wish you both every success in your new chapter here in Maine. Thank you so much for being my guests today.
Thank you very much. We thank you a lot for the opportunity, and also thank the Mainers for having us here.
Yes, you're such new arrivals. I rarely have people who are on the same year they've arrived. Your English is so fantastic that you're already ready to be on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you very much. We hope to have, who knows, a second opportunity to come in.
Please do come
and
back.
Share our history. So, and quickly going back to the language, it's like a Chinese living in the last village of China, listening to American speaking for the first time.
Yeah.
This is what exists from Angola to Cabinda. We don't understand
each other. You don't understand each other, and this is why you're looking for sovereignty, and you're raising consciousness about it. And if you want to learn more, ADCDH. Thank you all for listening. If you'd like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainersspeak.com. And check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Anselmo Pemba and Enrique Malonda have selected for us. Can you announce this song for us before we play it?
Filho de Cabinda by Felipe Mukenga. Sete Enzo, Sete Enzo, Vini Budi.
de Sadienzo. Sadienzo, Iribu de Sadienzo. Sadienzo, Iribu de Sadienzo.
Eu sou sim filho do